Cine Marathon, the movie marathons podcast where we watch movie marathons all in one day and talk about them later. We are continuing our marathon of the Bond movies. This is part three. If you missed parts one or two, go back and check those out. But if you're all caught up, then join us as we delve further into the world of James Bond.
That brings us to The Spy Who Loved Me, which I literally, in my notes, I have written down, don't remember shit. I barely remember anything. I do remember, like, Jaws.
Yeah, that was the introduction of Jaws, right?
Jaws is one of the best characters because he just keeps getting killed. Everyone around him keeps getting killed, and, like, you think, okay, there's no way he can survive that, but he's just dusting himself off. He's perfectly fine. He's almost kind of, I don't want to say he's endearing, but he keeps finding himself in these bad situations where you find him comical, even though you know he's supposed to be, like, a hitman and killer. You know?
Yeah, he's definitely, like, one of the Bond villains you don't just, like, want to die and hate. Like,
yeah.
He's enough of a character where you almost kind of feel for him.
Yeah, and, which I think is the reason why he comes back. Yeah. He should be, in theory, it's just a secondary, like, one-off.
Well, in the original cut, he did die in the movie, and they had a feeling that audiences were going to latch onto that character, so they shot this extra scene where you see him swimming away at the end of the movie. And apparently when they first played it for audiences, like, they were just applauding like crazy when they saw Jaws getting away. They're like, yes!
Nice.
Thank God he escaped.
Yeah, the scene where he, like, is attacking them in the van and ripping the doors
off. Oh, that's
off.
Amazing.
Like, it's really incredible, actually. I don't know how they did the effects, or if those were styrofoam doors or however they... But they look really real, and it's just, like, really intimidating but hilarious. And
when he tries just to grab onto the door, and it's not like the car drags him a few feet before the door gives away.
He just accidentally pulls the door.
His sheer body mass was enough to just rip the door off without him lurching forward.
I will say that Jaws was definitely, he was really helping keep me awake, because at this point, and, you know, I mean, we should explain that, like, for this marathon we actually cheated a little bit. And that we didn't do all the movies in a row with no break, because it's fucking impossible. Like, we would have probably...
If we intended to stay awake for as much of it as we would like to.
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't even be able to change out the disc. We'd be just unconscious. So we had agreed to...
We watched 13 the first day.
And so we were... And then take a 4-hour break. So at this point, we're well close to, like, the 24-hour mark.
Mm-hmm.
Having started at midnight the previous day. So this was the one where, like, we're really starting to run out of steam.
I can talk plenty. This is one of my
favorite
Bond...
I can talk as well.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite Bond movies. The overall plot is a little weird, because the villain, he's trying to start an international war so he can live in his city beneath the sea. But he builds this giant oil tanker to capture submarines, with the intent of, you know, capturing an American submarine and then capturing a Russian submarine, and he's going to use them to launch missiles at each other. So Bond and the Russians team up, and there's this great scene where Bond walks into the MI6 headquarters, and he sees the KGBM, the M equivalent of the KGB, and there's this look of, like, shit, on Bond's face, and that's when you find out that they're teaming up. And so it's like Bond, the best British agent, and then Triple X, the best KGB agent, teaming up. And there's that great fake out.
Triple X?
Yeah.
Played by Vin Diesel.
I must have slept through that part.
There's Barbara Bach, who is the wife of Ringo Starr.
Oh, wow.
But the great reveal is, like, you know, because, like, 007's being contacted and he's making his getaway. And then you see, you know, Russian and a girl guy, like, in bed together, and the radio goes off. They're all, Triple X, come in. And you see the guy get up, but he gets up and leaves the room because he knows it's not for him. And then that's when you see her. It's this great, like, reveal. Oh, Triple X, the best agent is a woman. You know, Bond's kind of his weakness, but also his strength. So I think the movie sets up a lot of really cool stuff. Again, the largest set ever constructed at the time for the submarine capturing base.
Yes, I do remember that. I remember the Lotus car, right? It's like driving around underwater.
The white one, right?
Wait, that's the boat car?
Yeah,
submarine car.
Oh man, that's the vehicle I'd take. That thing is just out of control.
And it's interesting. It's very like kind of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang esque.
Yeah.
Which like Ian Fleming wrote that as well.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Oh, that's right. He did.
Yeah. The guy who wrote James Bond wrote Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That man knows cars.
Yeah.
Right. I'll say too one last thing about fighting Jaws within this movie. It became very apparent to me how big an impact the train fight sequence from Russia with Love had, because this was the third iteration of a close quarters fight with the at least an antagonist.
Right. Because there was one in like Live and Let Die, right?
There was, yeah. The claw. It's definitely a very reliable location to fight in because it's, like I said, close quarters.
How does he escape Jaws in that fight?
He manages to kick him out of a window. And of course, Jaws not phased at all. Thrown out of a window from a moving train.
And they actually, at one point, they were pursuing Steven Spielberg to direct. But,
really?
But he had very little experience at the time, and so they were less interested in working with him, but coincidentally he went to direct Jaws.
I wonder, it's one of those, like, what ifs, like, what if he got the part?
Like, how crazy would that have been?
Like, would it have been the same, or would it have gone differently?
I bet you Jaws wouldn't have been called Jaws.
Well,
yeah, probably not.
Also, too, the there would never be an Indiana Jones the way we know it, at least, because...
Yeah, he would have already like dipped into that sort of serialized. Yeah.
Indiana Jones. What was his response to having never made a James Bond movie before?
Thank God, they didn't give him the part.
Yeah.
I'm happy with how film history turned out with that one.
Yeah.
Also, probably my top five theme songs.
The Spy Who Loved Me.
Nobody does it better.
I like that song.
It's an important song.
I will also agree with Pat.
I put it in my top five.
I'm on the other end of that. Nobody Does It Better Now. Really, one of my favorite.
Mm-hmm. It's also a really great visual effects sequence with the girls dancing on the guns doing gymnastics on the Luger gun barrels.
I know we disagreed on that one. I thought that one was a little phoned in.
I agree with you, Richard. That was pretty awesome. I really like that.
I'll say the bad guy, not so hot.
No, he was pretty long.
I don't remember what he looks like.
He's like a Jules Verne, like wannabe, like Nautilus guy. Like,
So he didn't.
Such a phone.
He didn't stick in my head. I couldn't point him out to you in the Usual Suspects lineup.
Just like the Moonraker knows, his dream will come true someday.
Well, that brings us to the halfway point movie. Believe it or not, I'm sure you've been listening to this podcast in like sections, but we're halfway through the podcast with Moonraker.
Yes.
Which is gonna, I think,
we started, another James Bond has come out. We apologize.
And I think this will probably be one of the more like divided conversations we have with Moonraker. But I know some of us are big fans and some of us don't like it. But who likes the movie?
I really love it.
I'm completely impartial.
Nah. Well, I guess I'm the killjoy.
No, I will kill plenty of that joy along with you.
Thank you.
I understand that you guys don't like.
I don't know if like despise is like a good enough word. Like I really don't like Moonraker.
I'm not gonna say Moonraker's a good movie, but damned if I wasn't entertained.
Very entertaining.
I like Jaws. Anything with Jaws was good, but if Jaws wasn't on screen, I was like, this movie can be done.
Dirty,
that's the
sugar
thing.
Slam girlfriend.
I like Jaws until that dumb. Like that is so that. Dumb that like this pigtails girlfriend just walks up and they're
she's
immediately
a scientist.
Loved.
I
and
like
then
that.
They hit, what's that song they play that like most stereotypical
story.
Like
the Simpsons? Yeah.
Like, oh man. And then he's with her at the end.
They can't all be as boring as Thunderball.
I love
I'll harpoon everyone in this movie.
I love Jaws and the fact that he found that sugar slam nerd, as you call her, Matthew. I like that aspect of the movie in the same respect that you like J.W. Pepper. It's like,
well,
like
I really have no defense for that one. That's a fair point. I'll say comedically, J.W. Pepper is like eons above.
Yeah.
Well, okay. In my opinion, J.W. Pepper is annoying and stupid.
I'll fucking kill you.
Anyway, I like it because Jaws is goofy and like derpy derp, and you kind of like him. And I really liked him. Like he's one of my favorite. characters, like, in the franchise. If I were to picture, like, okay, we're going to give Jaws a love interest, yeah. I would not at all picture
totally.
This
that would have been where Grace Jones would have fit into my franchise.
Exactly.
Like, it would not have been, like, the nerdiest little, like, science chick, but for her to fall in love with this, like, massive metal-toothed monster.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like, I love that.
It's completely ridiculous.
It's because I love the juxtaposition.
Oh, but giant metal teeth isn't ridiculous.
Yes, I love the juxtaposition between this dopey little nerd girl and massive Jaws. It's just
it's
awesome.
Like the girl that falls in love with Frankenstein in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only,
it's like Beauty and the Beast.
The only other option that I would have liked more than the cast they got was if they had pulled a Parent Trap and just put Jaws in a wig. Like, maybe I would have okayed that, too.
Yeah,
like,
I could go for that.
Like, girl Jaws, but I think what they
and
chose
and she's all
was
embarrassed
fine.
To smile because it turns out she has braces.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, that's beautiful.
I understand. I think it's just, what it speaks to overall, like, it's funny in and of itself.
Yeah.
And James Bond isn't without its comedy. I mean, it's been funny. There's funny most from the beginning. But I think Moonraker goes, like, a little too far with trying to be, like, funny. It gets so goofy that it just
true.
Crosses my threshold.
That's not true.
Of, like, that I can stand it. Like,
I don't know, but there's just something to me, like, just that image of all this, like, there's a ship of guys in spacesuits just, like, funneling out into space, like, with fucking laser guns, and then you're like, oh, man, what's gonna happen? And then there's a whole nother army of guys with fucking laser guns are just floating out. It's an amazing image. And it's, granted, I'm not gonna say it's a Bond image. It may not fit here.
It's nowhere near a Bond image. It's a Star Wars image.
Yeah, it's a Bond
it's
image.
But, but damn, I was, like, jaw on the floor. I was so happy.
So where were you with the gondola car and the pigeon triple take of a Adi moment?
That was stupid. That was
honestly, like, if you're going to rip a movie a new one just because there's a pigeon triple take, you might as well take Citizen Kane out of the running.
But to me, it's that whole sequence. Really, like, you take that one bit. That really sums up a lot of my issues. Bond, instead of getting... He's always gotten away, like, he fucking jumps cars, does awesome shit, and is, like, always badass. And he, like, hits a switch on a gondola and, like, rides it through the street.
Fucking hover gondola.
And the bad guys don't even, like, try
that's
to chase
why
him.
It's a hover gondola.
Yeah,
he's on land now and we're in boats.
Yeah,
what
the
do
bad
we
guys
do?
Just goofily go, like, gahleel?
You're telling
like,
me?
And, like, and then everyone... Literally, like, the entire city of... What are they, in Venice or wherever they are?
Something,
like,
or Amsterdam or something.
Every person present has to have, like, I'm drinking coffee. Like, whoa! Yeah. Like, got plates.
You're right. Like, I could take that as total commonplace.
Yeah,
I would not even look twice at a fucking hover gondola.
Here's the deal. I'll acquiesce if any time during your life, if you saw someone with a fucking hover gondola, you didn't do a spit take, I'll give you everything I own. How about we try that?
Right.
One of my problems is the space battle with the lasers. Well, first of all,
yeah.
the whole point of building a space station and launching this, getting construction materials, all these rockets are being launched. No one's wondering why all these space shuttles are going up. The whole thing is like with America and Russia that they're constantly watching missile launches. And all of a sudden, here's a guy who must have launched 300, 400 missiles to get all that building material to build that space station up there, first of all. And then you have this giant space battle, which visually is kind of interesting. And, you know, people are getting blown away and flying off and burning up. And it's like, oh, well, okay. But where do you go from lasers in space with the next Bond movie?
You don't, because it's the best.
Well, according to Leprechaun, the next movie would be in the hood.
Yeah, see, it's like once you introduce Bond. The concept of having laser guns, why would you never use them again?
That's a very
because
good
argument. They're perfusing the ship together. They're not four weapons.
Well, you really said it earlier, and it's just they like Star Wars came out, and then they're like I actually read online that like they were originally going to do Moonraker first. Like there was a script, and then they looked and were like, "This is too expensive. We can't do it." They shelved it.
That makes sense.
And then the second Star Wars comes out, they're like, fucking dust it off, boys. Like, there we go, fire the rockets. And, like, it's...
Debbie Pepper's out of Paramount.
Evidently.
Just to ride a missile.
And not just in the laser guns, but, like, if you look at the sets and the production, like, especially towards the end with the ships and stuff, like, they're... at the, like, rebel base on Yavin. People are, like, driving around in the same fucking, like, square boxes moving.
Yeah, they're in a ruined temple where they launch the rockets from.
It's just so, like, blatantly. And I think that's my problem with it. It doesn't feel like a Bond movie. It feels like, let's just make a Star Wars movie.
Another thing that's not especially James Bondy about it is the fact that everyone left the theater understanding the bad guy's plot.
So what was the villain's plot in that?
He was going to kill the entire human race and start his Aryan race on this fucking spaceship and then descend on Earth.
Like space.
Like, how simple is that?
But it wasn't even an Aryan race. It was just like a group of misfits that are like. It's like
originally he was run like all the pretty people.
He was saying that it was going to be people that weren't mutants, and then Jaws is like.
And then Jaws.
Then Jaws is there.
Like Jaws. Like, I know he's a fan favorite, but he just like with the drop of the hat switches allegiances. And
why do you make a quadruple extra large jumpsuit if you don't have mutants on your ship?
I mean, but the people they chose, like, for the, like, pretty or perfect people, it was, like, it was, like, a mediocre convention. It was just, like, like, there was nothing interesting or particularly, like, beautiful.
Well, they can't be too hot because you're not trying to distract the camera.
That's true.
You want to be focused on Roger Moore.
What I will give the movie, though, for as much as I'm harping on it, is, like, at least it held our attention. Like,
That's what I'm saying.
Like, 13 movies in, we're, like, all exhausted. I was wide awake.
You know what held my attention was the counter, wondering when the fuck this movie is going to be over. I never felt till I looked at you. For your eyes only for you. Only for you.
All right, guys. The next movie is For Your Eyes Only.
Only for you.
Yeah,
for your eyes only, which a lot of us really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's good. I'd say it's probably my top five favorite Bond movies, actually.
Now, I recall in the opening of the movie, it opened pretty strong because Bond is in like a graveyard and he's like visiting his dead wife, and then like Blofeld tries to kill him.
Yeah, with a
big chopper,
rigged helicopter. He's like trapped inside of it.
Oh yeah,
he's like toying around with him, flying the helicopter in all which way.
But you never really see Blofeld. All right, they don't even call him Blofeld. Right, it's like
it's implied.
It's just clearly, but he's in like a wheelchair.
Yeah,
and he like I remember that like Bond grabs the wheelchair with a helicopter and like throws him down a chimney.
He stabs it with one of the landing.
Yeah, and he's like and like goes down the
and chops him down a smokestack.
I personally would have just landed the helicopter and kicked his ass because let's face it, the dude's in a wheelchair. Like, what the fuck is he gonna do? I mean,
that's true. But I like this Bond, like, instead of getting in, like a kilt and standing around Blofeld for, like, 5 hours, he just, like, lays waste to him, like, immediately. Blofeld's just no problem.
Yeah, this
like,
is the opposite of Sir Hillary. The exact opposite.
Yeah. Sir Hillary is dead.
The opposite is James Bond. That's what it was. Aside from the opening, which is, like, kind of goofy, like, most of the movie's actually, like, fairly serious. I think it's sort of, like, a return to, like, a not psychotic Bond. Like, after Moonraker, they sort of tone it back a bit, which I actually really enjoy.
No, I totally agree. I think that this got back to being more of an espionage kind of Bond. It was, again, kind of about making sure, like the top secret British decoder, because, like, a submarine went down. Did they ever say, I can't remember why it went down. Did they?
They hit a mine, or they pulled one up because it was a fishing vessel was their, like, front.
Oh, that's right.
And
right.
They picked up a mine with their net, and it hit the side of the ship and exploded.
Now, did the lead woman's guy die in that sub?
No, I think
because I know she wanted revenge.
No, the main girl, her parents.
Yeah, her father was killed shortly after.
Yeah, like, her parents, who were both, like, they were Greek. Yeah,
they were divers, and like they would dive for like sunken treasures, and I guess the British government hired them to figure out where the sub went down.
Yeah, okay. And it was all involved with the ATAC, right? The ATAC was the decoder system that was like everybody was after in this. So when her parents get killed, I guess in relation to the ATAC system, she like vows revenge on everybody with a crossbow.
Nice.
Which is the best possible revenge.
When she kills the assassin, like, mid-jump.
Yeah.
On the diving board.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is, like, one of the hotter Bond girls in like a while.
Yes. Yeah,
she is my top three.
I think I have to completely disagree with all of you. Because she's got,
we should have mentioned at the top of the hour that Jackson is wasted.
He's had about 5 Sam Adams so far.
They're a good beer.
So what didn't you like about her?
Well, she just had a Neanderthal thing going on.
No,
like
what?
She didn't look evolved. Wow. She looked like she belonged.
Well, I would club her over the head and just take her to a cave.
And I would not fault you for it. To each his own. To each his own. It's just not my slice of cake.
She was a Chanel model. She was gorgeous.
If you used the computer to breathe like all the Bond girls together from each movie, this movie would have the hottest girls. Because I feel like there are other girls in this movie that are above average hot too.
One of them was a man.
Girl? Honestly, I like the ice skater girl. Like she was annoying.
Do you like her or do you think she's hot?
Well, I've come to realize that I tend to latch on to the girls that you guys think are annoying. Like
in
Plenty O'Toole.
But like, for me, this skater girl was like, she was pretty. Like, it's not like she was ugly.
No.
But yeah, she seemed very like young and kind of innocent.
She had a very like real TGIF vibe about her.
Very like tee-hee-hee, I'm a skater girl.
So you're calling
but
her
she was
blossom,
also like totally like hot for Bond and like was like stripping
but
completely
Bond,
and hiding in his bed and shit.
Everybody
threw
it
Bond,
back.
Though.
Yeah, but they
Bond
hide
knew
it for no
that
reason.
Was like jailbait.
Bond does not know that because as we saw in Live and Let Die, he hides underage girls in his
house.
He's
quite susceptible to jail.
He's grown. He's grown as a person.
It's an older,
Richard.
Wiser Bond. I'm just saying, if Bond throws it back, like...
It's too young.
It's
too young.
And he was, what, 60?
This one, he didn't look it yet to
me. No, he didn't.
Like,
he did
Roger
not.
Moore aged really well. I mean, like, later movies, he, like, looked old as hell. But, like, this one, I thought he still looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, I'm still giving her my number 3 spot for all the Bond girls. One, I mean, not just because I thought she was incredibly attractive, but she was actually, like... had purpose. Most of the Bond girls we had seen recently were really generic and you almost couldn't tell them apart. And then she showed up and she actually had a reason to be there. She was a part of the plot line. Her parents had been killed. She was ready for revenge. And
she was like out for blood.
Right? Yeah, she was out for blood, which is awesome in a Bond girl. And she had a crossbow and was like actually using it.
Her personal story was exciting to watch. I remember we were all getting very excited for her.
Which is rare for a Bond girl. You don't get excited for a Bond girl.
That's true.
Well, I always get excited for a Bond girl.
I get excited about a Bond girl, not necessarily for her. I'm not in this for her game.
You wanted her to succeed. You wanted the revenge to take place.
It was exciting. Yeah,
I really liked when him and her like first met and they're like running back to the car. Right when they get to the edge, there's like people trying to break into the car. It's like burglar protected. And so his car just literally explodes as burglar protection. And so it like kills these two guys that were trying to break into his car.
Yeah,
and
wait,
James
did
Bond...
he have like secret documents inside that he needed to protect?
I don't,
like,
not that we were made aware of.
Not
just,
really.
His Moody Blues albums were in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then this movie had the, I think, one of the better like ski chases. Because ski chasing was sort of like a staple of the Bond movies.
Definitely.
But this one's, like, at a ski resort the whole time, and I remember Roger Moore, like, I mean, the rear screen projection's pretty bad of, like, Roger Moore rolling around. But all of his stuff, like, fighting the dudes and, like, doing 360s and going around, I thought it was beat the hell out of, like, on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Definitely. I think I had actually confused the ski chase from this movie for being the Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Okay, the best, one of the best ski things, if you're calling this one the best, I'll say one of the best is the Honor Majesty's Secret Service ski chase.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, that one's
especially
good.
When he's clocking people with his skis at the edge of a cliff.
Yes.
And they're just going flying off to their death.
And that's certainly the first one. It's also worth noting that I think this is the first movie directed by John Glenn, who directs like all the Bond movies for a while after this.
He cut
Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
He cut Moonraker and a couple before that, I think, too.
Yeah.
He definitely took over at the right time. And he didn't... It did, like, the tone didn't change too much, like, because he came in mid-Roger Moore, but it's not like, I didn't feel like Roger Moore's movies changed all of a sudden because he took over.
Well, if anything, they toned it back a little bit, after the Moonraker madness.
Although A View to a Kill is coming up, and that movie definitely
but,
has some
goofiness. Yeah, but you know, well, we'll talk about it when we get there, but that one's, like, the right kind of bad for me.
This is the first... and probably only, I'm hoping, I don't know, maybe I'm not hoping, that's
that we're aware of
words. One of the females, not really a lead, just a background person, was a man before she was a hottie at a pool.
Bond transgender girl.
Yes, Richard just called a man a hottie.
Yeah.
Hey, we were all watching it. None of us knew which one it was, but all the girls on screen were hot.
Yes.
We can't be faulted. Right.
In all fairness, I'm sorry, Richard. She was, was looking good.
It's a she.
She became a she.
It was post op.
She was looking really good.
Now, to be fair, the people who made the movie, they didn't know. Right.
Nobody
like it
knew.
Was
Nobody
it was
knew.
Like later. Yeah. It wasn't like they set out to like break new ground with
no.
like a dude Bond girl.
The casting yeah. went out.
It wasn't until View to a Kill that they cast the first like literal she-male.
Pre-op
situation.
No, but the casting call went out and this girl like, you know, got picked and everyone thought she was hot enough to be a Bond girl and it just turned out that she used to be a man.
I think we're using the term Bond girl loosely. I understand
yes,
she was in
much.
The movie.
Right. She was
but
a girl in the
she's
Bond
barely
movie.
In maybe two shots, and we never see
right.
even a mid shot of her face.
Yeah, it's more like Bond, like eye candy.
Bond accoutrement.
Yeah, not. She didn't have lines. She wasn't like a big main
but
character.
Definitely not. But I think it became of note because apparently Roger Moore somehow found out about it and decided that however much interaction he had with her was too much interaction. We don't really know how far it went.
Maybe he just smelled it out. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he knew. Such a ladies man. Like, he was like, something's not right.
Yeah. You smell like a man.
He walks out to the pool and just goes, dude. You couldn't see, but I pointed.
Oh, and then it's worth mentioning that in the movie, even though we think it's one of the more attractive Bond girls, like, you really don't see that much of her.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, she sort of, like, strips down, and everyone's like, oh, here we go. And then they're like, oh, it's For Your Eyes
yeah,
Only.
Yeah, she literally
he,
says
like,
that,
yeah.
For Your Eyes
she
Only.
She invokes
yeah.
the title.
Which I also kind of thought was cool, because up until that point, all of the Bond girls were, like, in some array of, just,
yeah.
like, you know, not
hiding
dressed.
Tapes up their butt.
Yeah, like, but this was, like, the first Bond girl, yeah. like, that actually was like, well, you know what, I'm not going to show everything, and it's, I don't know, it was an interesting take on
it's
a Bond
classy.
Girl. Yeah, it was a classy Bond girl. Was this the Bond movie where, at the end, instead of actually completing the mission, Bond just breaks the machine?
Yes.
And is like,
yes.
oh, well, neither of us win, so yay?
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Right. But I think the point of, like, destroying the machine, I mean, well, it was kind of a crazy move. The machine was going to be destroyed on the submarine anyway. The guy just couldn't get to the lever in time before the ship sank. Either way, it was going to be destroyed.
And I just feel like yeah. Bond usually has some pretty sweet solutions to situations that seem impossible. And for this one to be just like, well, he's kind of cornered, we'll just have him break it, was like a little, it was surprising to
well,
me.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, nobody's perfect.
I thought he was operating on like the completely moral correct thing to do, which is like, this is a dangerous weapon. And we can pretend that there are right hands for it to be in, but there aren't, and so I'm just going to destroy it.
And he felt it was a move that the Russians would respect.
Yeah.
You know, and Gogol did, and Gogol was like, okay.
Yeah,
you know?
Sort of like
he gave him like a tip of the hat,
yeah,
a touché
like,
moment.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Gogol understands how the game is played. We're in all.
The next movie was Octopussy.
Boring.
It's basically the opening sequence with a clown running away with a Fabergé egg.
Right.
Like,
right.
That, I mean, you don't. I mean, what more do you need to
that.
Say? What more? How do you add to that movie? Like,
what,
where do you go from
is
there?
When Bond himself dresses up like a clown later in the movie. Right. Like,
it felt like a game of like telephone where they were just taking one page at a time and handing it around a circle of people to write the movie.
Well, I know. This time we'll have a clown, and it'll have a Fabergé egg.
And then he'll get shot in a river. But he's not dead. He gets up, and he bursts through a window into an office, and then he's dead. And then some other shit happens.
Like, Octopussy's the one that, like, we have our differences about Moonraker. Like, I don't like it, but I can see the merits of it. But, like, Octopussy just, like, sucks.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, really bad.
It had a lot of potential, too, with the Octopussy's trained team of women and acrobat fighters and everything.
It, yeah,
it sounds incredibly exciting.
It was
exciting.
Like Bond
right?
like meets Dolomite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it felt like they kind of mixed in because Pussy Galore in Goldfinger
That's
had also
right.
had a team of women
That's
pilots.
Right.
Right.
And so this was kind of a reworking of that in a way.
But in a totally uninteresting way.
Yeah, far
yeah.
less interesting.
And the plot wasn't really... Ultimately, it came down to setting off a nuclear bomb on a U.S. military base. But there was all this stuff going on before with auctioning of jewels and getting away with jewels.
Yeah.
And I really
and
don't understand...
forging them.
And yeah, like
forged
they were,
ones especially.
Yeah, they were forging a Fabergé egg, but they had the real one. So... they had them buy the fake one and then they traded the real one at a game.
Because if you have something and then you make a fake one, you sell the fake one, then you can't sell the real one now because someone thinks that they already bought the real one. So now you've essentially made the
you
real
know,
one a fake
in all
one.
Honesty, we're giving the movie too much credit to even try to figure it out. Like, it was so bad.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember any of this.
This sounds like a mind twister, but trust me, it is no Inception. Like, really, like, if you plan on, like, doing this marathon and you just feel really tired and you don't think that you can watch every one of them, this is a sleeper, in my opinion.
Yeah,
like, you can definitely...
Did we all sleep through parts of this one?
I definitely did.
I woke up right at the beginning.
Okay.
I actually did not sleep at all during this one, but wish I had.
But this is the one with the guy with the yo-yo saw blade.
That was true. Oh. That was cool.
That was cool.
Also, that was a
not practical, but... Still pretty sweet.
Is this the one with the plane flying out of a
horse's ass?
Yeah. Oh, right. That little plane was awesome.
Yeah, that was funny and
exciting. Okay, now let me explain that for the listeners at home who are having trouble compiling an image of a plane flying out of a horse's ass. There's a trailer, and it looks like a regular horse trailer like you'd be following on, like, a freeway. But then suddenly it, like, folds up, and the horses' asses, it turns out they're fake back ends of horses, and they fold up.
Fake
and then from
asses.
From where the front ends of the horses would be, a small plane takes off out of the back of the plane, or
wings,
out of the back of the
folded.
Truck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the perfect cover.
I kind of remember that now. That was pretty ridiculous.
It was exciting.
It was a cool little plane, too.
That may be the best part of that entire movie.
Well, I remember a moment where he's, like, swinging from vines and they do like the Tarzan.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Was that this movie?
It's like
that
in
was
the
this movie.
Movie.
It was
he's
this
like,
movie.
That was definitely a low franchise, low
what
part of this
the
franchise.
What was the context for that? I don't even remember.
Well,
what
it's
the
simply
was.
Swinging
he was, like,
from a vine, and that's all.
It was he and Indiana Jones were trying to get back to the Jeeps.
There were a lot of monkeys.
That's right.
They
were
racing. Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
But this had what's her name comes back, right?
Octopussy, because she was in the actress.
Right. Maude Adams.
Maude Adams.
Maude
Adams.
Right.
She had been in Man with the Golden Gun previously.
So she's like a double dipping.
But she was a different
girl.
Character.
She yeah, different character because she was killed.
Yeah, she got murdered.
In Man with the Golden
I
Gun.
Wish she got killed in this one. It was...
Between that and like the opening theme song too.
Yeah.
Was this all time high?
Yes.
This was all time low.
Which ironically represents an all time low for the series.
And I did love the Octopussy's like troop. Their like identifiable tattoo that was clearly like
a rub on
tattoo.
Yeah,
it was like,
well, that's how you identify it.
The prop master bought 12 popsicles.
Yeah.
Is this the one where the parrot talks at the end to the queen?
Oh,
of England?
Yeah.
I thought that was for Your Eyes Only.
That's for Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh, my bad.
We missed that point.
That was so like derpy and dumb. I must have just assumed
because her
it
parents
was this
had the parrot.
I think I have to say thus far that this may have been the most screen time that Q had. Because he wound up showing up on location of James Bond's mission, and then he just wound up hanging around for a while, and we even saw him fishing so that he could keep an eye on Bond on the other side of the body of water, and it was fun to see him hanging around for a little bit. And
you're right, yeah.
And he comes in on a hot air balloon.
That's right.
The perfect craft for a castle assault. Hot air balloon.
Q in the movie is almost like a kind of like the Felix Leiter character. Like, it's not like he has one scene. He just like comes in and out. It's like helping Bond.
Yeah, he becomes a field agent.
Are there any like cool gadgets for that one? That
the hot air balloon.
That's not really.
And the horse ass airplane.
That's okay. I'll call that.
And the fake Fabergé egg.
Yeah.
Right.
With
which
the clown outfit, like a Q Branch original.
Q Branch clown.
Yeah, why
makeup.
he's running around in a clown outfit the whole end, like with a tear in his eye, right?
Yeah.
And it's like so goofy. Like, why is Bond dressed like a clown?
Didn't he have a crocodile submarine in this one?
I remember the crocodile.
Yeah,
I remember the crocodile.
Because I remember envying the fact that he had one and I don't. Like,
it's also the perfect possible like hiding place. It's great.
And no one ever questions a crocodile anywhere.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Because
they're great,
naturally
you know,
observant of
where.
Conversations.
It's a great getaway vehicle, really, too.
Next movie was Never Say Never Again.
Yeah.
4 months later.
Oh, yes. It wasn't like an officially licensed Bond movie. It was like a kind of a knockoff one. But Sean Connery's in it.
Yeah.
So oh, it was made for TV?
Wasn't it made for TV?
No. This was
theatrical.
No, it was released in a theater.
This was a theater release?
Yeah, yeah. It was theatrical.
Oh, dear God.
Was it Paramount? Did Paramount release
it? It was Orion.
This came out the same year as Octopussy,
yes.
They dubbed it like the Battle of the Bonds because it was two different Bond movies in the same year.
Awesome.
Which, worth noting, it lost the Battle of the Bonds, like, horrifically.
Which
like,
is a
I mean,
shame.
Financially, it made way less money than
but
Octopussy.
But creatively, it soared.
No, it's definitely... I consider it a better film than Octopus.
So I definitely would.
Never, never say never again, although it was like, this is Sean Connery's last film, right?
Yeah, this is his final Bond outing.
Like, I mean, Grant, yes, he's old as shit by this point, but like...
Yeah, he's in like an old folks home in the movie,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
he is...
No, it's not an old folks home.
It's like a geriatric, like...
It definitely seems
well, they,
like
they
it.
Do reference that he has been out of the field for a long time, that he's been teaching, and so it kind of makes reference that, yeah, he is kind of a dated...
Well,
because
it's
himself.
Like, okay, so it's like a remake of Thunderball, right?
Yeah,
so
one of the producers from Thunderball had the rights to the basic plot of Thunderball, the rights to Spectre, the rights to, I think, the bad guy in this one, Blofeld.
Yeah.
I think he had the rights to Blofeld, and I think he had the rights to the octopus, like, logo.
Domino,
that they use
he must have
movie.
That, too.
Yeah, and Domino and everything.
Yeah, but so like in the original Thunderball, like at the beginning of the movie, he's at some like spa. So I guess they like it's. I guess it's supposed to be a spa again, but it really since he's so old looking,
it doesn't seem like a spa because there's a laboratory where they take pee samples.
Right.
Yeah, and the medicine closet that has different medications, urine samples, and poison on the same shelf.
Yeah, there's poison on the shelf.
Bond does kill a guy with urine.
Yeah, he starts
his own urine.
Yeah, this movie starts off really strong.
It was a great fight too.
Yeah, it's one of the better melee fights in the whole Bond franchise.
Yeah,
like,
wait, so he's in a room and he like just grabs a jar and throws it at the guy.
Much
and the guy
later,
freaks out
at the end of the fight.
Yeah, at the very end of the fight. Yeah,
and then the guy lands on like a. He
backs into
himself.
A shelf and he's stabbed on a graduated cylinder.
I back up and just impale myself on things for some reason.
Well, I don't know what I would do if somebody threw their piss at me.
I'd wish I was dead.
So, I mean, I can't really fault it there, but I mean, it is kind of a lame way to end such an awesome fight.
I don't know. Killing someone with your piss is pretty badass.
Yeah, no.
But it wasn't his intent. Yeah, wasn't like, he just throws it.
That
and
guy
then
became Bond's
like, oh,
territory,
what?
Basically.
Yeah.
Hey, man, when somebody's coming at you with a freaking metal dildo that can cut through
boy.
Swords, I think throwing piss at them is, like, your last resort.
I forgot that the dude had the dildo.
Yeah, it was like this floppy
cock. Oh, man.
This thing, it was, yeah, it was
he
like...
He has a crazy slinky dildo.
Yeah.
Floppy
like,
metal.
Made of steel that can cut through a fucking katana blade. Like, that he was holding Hattori Hanzo steel, and this dildo thing cut through it. It was amazing.
Didn't he hold up, like, some metal to block?
Like a
tray.
Like a
fucking
like
lightsaber. Like,
Yeah. Crazy.
Also, you can call Sean Connery an old piece of shit in this movie, and he is an old man, but Roger Moore was older in For Your Eyes Only.
That's true.
Than Sean Connery was here, because Roger Moore's actually, like, 3 years older than Sean Connery.
But Connery just didn't age as well as Moore did. It
true.
Just didn't hold up.
I mean,
ditto.
I don't think he aged poorly. I think he's just noticeably older,
maybe.
Which works like, for this character
I
mean, of Bond.
Connery's like a
good
looking
old
man.
They did acknowledge
it's
it in the story.
Like, this movie had, when he faces the villain, it had this fucking like video game called Domination.
Yeah.
That they play.
That was awesome.
Oh, right. It looked like it, like War Games or something. Like,
yeah.
Like,
it's like this vector graphics.
Yeah.
Game. That you
like
play
you're doing
on
the trench
run, the screen.
Old, like, Star Wars game. But, and then the joystick would, like, elicit pain?
Yeah,
yeah
like,
you would get
like,
an electric
shock.
You get like a shock treatment.
Yeah.
And the more the your opponent, like, gains score against you, the more, like, more painful it is for you to keep playing.
Yeah. There was, like, 30 minutes of the movie dedicated to that, explaining that game and, like, playing it. It was, like, a lot of the movie.
Yeah, it was
and,
like Casino Royale all over again.
Yeah.
Baccarat was domination.
But the villain was just, like, such a jerk. Like, he invented the game. He's the only one who's ever played it. And he's all, I've never found an opponent who can beat me in this game that
he,
I created.
Like, he was,
and
like
I'm the only one who can practice it.
And I keep it in my bedroom.
Yeah, he's, like, shitty about it.
Yeah, the movie in turns into hackers or something. Like, they're playing a video game. He set it up.
It's like when it's
Bond's
like,
zero cool. Like,
fucking hacking the Gibson. It's like when Louis C.K. makes that joke about how it's like, oh, you have to play hide and seek with your like daughter or son, but they make up the rules. And then when they win, they're like shitty about it. They're like, oh, so great that you beat me at the game whose rules you made up.
Like, the game, I think, is pretty awesome, and I think that it's a great part of the story. And I really like the fact that it brings in the Sean Connery type of Bond, where he's like, okay, you beat me, but I'm not going to accept failure.
Right.
Because I'm that much of a badass. Yeah. We're going to play for the world. He obviously kicks his ass, and but he's like dignified about it and like shows off in front of Kim Basinger.
Well, it's definitely different than the Baccarat games we've been playing. Like, can you imagine if the dude in Climax had to explain domination?
Perry Nelson's like, I just lost. Does anyone have an envelope full of countries so I can play again?
And then Kim Basinger's in this movie.
She plays the character of Domino, which is like a rehash of my favorite Bond girl, who was in Thunderball originally, played by Claudine Auger, and she was number one for me, and then Kim Basinger shows up and tries to redo it. It feels like the Psycho remake or something. It's just not fair.
Vince Vaughn in a wig. Yeah. What are you doing?
It's inappropriate.
It could have been worse.
It could have been worse.
She's not bad.
She's not great, though.
I mean, she's no original Domino. Don't get it wrong.
Not at all.
But, I mean, it definitely could have turned out worse.
Yeah, Kim Basinger, she's a good-looking lady. So
busted.
No way.
She's by no means an unattractive woman.
Yeah.
But she is an unattractive actress.
I thought she was looking pretty good when her and Bond mounted a horse and jumped off a building.
That whole sequence.
Yeah. I like how it cut to them just like, oh,
yeah. It's like slow-mo, right? Like, yeah. Whoa. Yeah, Bond, like, does a horse jump.
Yeah.
Off a fucking building into the ocean?
It's actually a cliff.
It's a cliff.
Oh, right. It's a cliff. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh,
my God.
Well, see, they jump off the horse before they hit the water. And I don't know, was that to slow their descent?
I have no idea.
Oh, right. Because the horse hits the water like
upside down.
Yeah. Upside down.
Yeah.
Which I read, I don't know if it's true, but the trivia said that this was, because of that scene, this was the first movie to ever utilize the disclaimer at the end of a film for, like, no animals were harmed in the making of this film.
Oh, really?
Like, after this movie,
it
had to be standard that was placed.
Because, frankly, it looked like they fucked that horse.
That horse looked jacked.
I mean, obviously it's dead now, but, like, I would think it was dead.
It was dead that day.
It was dead when it hit the water.
Plenty of more glue where that came from.
Do you think maybe they threw, like a dead horse?
I don't think so. I mean, because there's been a history of, like, sideshow acts that had people jumping into pools of water with horses.
Yeah.
Like, but doesn't the saying go,
what is that movie called?
You don't beat a dead horse.
like, Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I don't think it's by nature, like Wizard of Oz.
But
like,
those horses go into the water, like feet first, right? Not like head first, like this one first.
Hey, just because it did a backflop doesn't mean it immediately died. Like, I've done a backflop before, and I'm pretty sure I'm not dead. I don't know. This feels like heaven.
That angle, like, they dropped it from, it just, like, literally flipped.
I think they just jumped it off a cliff at, like, five stories up.
They just did it.
It's a pretty amazing stunt. I remember that during the marathon, I always have the worst timing in, like, choosing to use the restroom.
Yes, you do.
Like, anytime something rad happened, I was, like, in the kitchen, like, pouring orange juice or something. Like, I would always...
Been in the kitchen, we would have seen it, but we were taking out the trash.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, and so I totally missed... I just heard all of you screaming, and I ran in, and it was over, and I was sad, but... I saw it after the marathon. I looked it up, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, sort of one of the hazards of doing this long a marathon is, like, you got to take breaks somewhere.
Yeah.
And sometimes you miss horse jumps.
Yeah, you got to empty that colostomy bag.
I have to say, that horse jump, to cap off the sequence as it did, it really reminded me of something that Terry Gilliam would have done in one of his movies.
Yeah.
And a Baron Munchausen.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly. With it being so horse-oriented, it really did remind me of the adventures of Baron Munchausen.
I'm going to start killing horses on set again. Those were the days.
That's the only way to go. Every movie should be like Apocalypse Now.
Why couldn't the cell just do it practically?
Can you imagine how horrified people would be?
Jennifer Lopez is just standing there, like, blacking out from horror.
Everyone pukes up. The only other thing I remember about Never Say Never Again is that, and maybe it's just because we were watching Q all day, but the Q in the movie was, like, garbage.
What an asshole he is.
Like, fuck that guy.
Like, it was, like, just a phony-ass Q. Because it's been Q for, like, 20 years at this point. And this guy's like, hi, I'm Q. And you're like, no,
but
you're
he doesn't
not.
Do
like,
anything. He literally shows up to be an asshole.
Yeah, Bond receives no gadgets.
Yeah, he just says hi. Like, is Q in the retirement home with Bond?
Probably.
However, Rowan Atkinson was in this movie.
Yeah, is he now? He's not Felix Leiter though, right?
No,
because they have like a black guy that's Felix Leiter, I believe.
Now you mentioned that in the marathon. And I don't think that was ever proven.
You know what? I looked it up and
there was.
There was?
It's the black dude that's helping him out is Felix Leiter.
Oh, okay.
Because it's like the original.
He doesn't count.
It's an alt universe.
Wait, was this the one? Was this the one that was the principal from Bill and Ted?
Yes.
Oh.
The short and
I take that back. He definitely
Is he the principal or the teacher?
No, he's a teacher. The guy that's giving him a grade to write.
Like, Revenge of the Nerds. No, he was good. He was good. I'll give him that.
Wasn't Mr. Bean 006?
Was that his official title?
No.
I'm pretty sure he was, wasn't he?
I think he was just an O.
Yeah, because he was very nervous and silly. Like, I think he was just stationed down there and he was Bond's contact.
Yeah.
And was very nervous about the whole thing going on. Like, Bond even says, like, you know, oh, make sure you're not followed. And he keeps, like, dodging in and out of columns.
Yeah.
Like, to make sure.
He has some ridiculous name, like, Periwether Small Fawcett or something like that. It's like,
that was it. That was exactly the name.
Undoubtedly, his name is Periwether.
But I think if he were an agent, they would have just said Fawcett? His number, and that would have been it.
If there was ever something that took place underwater for a substantial amount of time, there was always the threat of a shark.
Yeah,
in these James Bond movies, and
yeah, it didn't matter where it was taken.
Yeah, no matter where, no matter what type of water.
Yeah, they were in Lake Erie.
Well, yeah, no, but the guy in Louisiana did have.
Yeah,
he did have sharks.
Yeah,
did he have sharks too, or just crocodiles?
No, he had sharks in that little like river that he had running through his underground.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's I forget who it was that he was with, but somebody had put something on his oxygen tank that attracted sharks.
That's right.
It's called blood.
Yeah. It just disperses a little spurt of blood.
It's called a blood pack.
Cutting edge.
That was my favorite shark sequence out of any of the sharks.
It was pretty good.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we had seen sharks, but we had never seen like a shark that seemed actively engaged in what was going on. Like Bond was like trying to shut a door on him, and the shark was like, "Fuck no!" And then you know the shark even busted through a window.
And it was a real shark.
Shark gets doesn't the shark get like shot in this one?
It's the one where he gets shot in the gill.
Like harpooned and the shark is like dead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a pretty amazing.
Did they
sequence,
actually harpoon the shark?
It really looked like.
Well, if they didn't, then that would be a co-explanation. For the warning,
right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Not harming
all them. Sharks were harmed during the production of this film.
Yeah, I wonder if the warning
shit about sharks. Sharks eat.
Yeah, maybe. No, I think no. I'm.
They
the,
fed the horse
the
to the shark.
Disclaimer about not harming animals was established after the release of this film.
So they like definitely harmed animals.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It looks like.
Yeah.
All right, well, the next movie was A View to a Kill, which I guess a lot of people consider it not good, but I actually really
I think
like
it. Yeah.
It was pretty good.
I enjoyed it.
It's a hell of a sign-off.
It was one of the better plots, like one of the better villain plots. Like, it was a little extreme, like not necessarily believable, but it was at least an interesting plot in the sense that if it could be done, it really would work.
Yeah, it went back to the realm of supervillainy.
Yeah.
Where, the previous villain was trying to, you know, steal nuclear weapons, which is cool. Like, that's pretty scary stuff. And the guy before that was trying to get a secret decoder machine. But this guy's got a plan. He wants to destroy Silicon Valley, and he's pumping seawater, and he's got oil wells, and he's got geologists. It's like, God, what is this guy going to do?
Yeah, we have to say, Christopher Walken did great. Like, he's one of the more memorable villains of, like, the movies, for, like, the guy in, I like For Your Eyes Only, but the guy's, like, a skating instructor or whatever, such a, like, who gives a shit villain, like, this guy's, like, like you said, like, a return to super villainy,
He's an ex-KGB agent.
Oh, man.
Like, genetically engineered to be, like, this perfect person, but, of course, like, the side effect was that he's crazy.
Yeah. He's, like, totally evil. Like, he blows away all those workers for, like, no reason.
They just
be, like, an asshole. Like,
apparently that part was written for David Bowie, too, but he was unavailable for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been interesting, actually.
But I can see Christopher Walken as, like, the next go-to.
Yeah, this is Moneypenny's, the original Moneypenny's last
movie. Yeah, this is the last of that Moneypenny who...
She's
was
in,
before
like,
more.
Grandma old. Like,
is this is this when she debuts her frumpy suit?
Yeah,
her pink hat.
She's like, "Oh, you like this new dress I got?" And it makes her look like 30 years older than she is, and she's at least 100 by this time.
Like, she's building a gingerbread house. Like, this old woman. But it was weird to see... That's the crazy thing about watching these marathons. You see so many of these actors that are in more movies than the Bond got people.
That's true.
Are, like, just... You watch them age in a day. Because you're the first... Like, from Russia with Love. And you see her, and you're like, hey, Moneypenny, looking, you know, nuts.
Yeah, you're like, well, hello, ma'am.
End of the day, it's just, like, old grandma. Yeah. Like, wow.
Like they called cut for the, you know, they wrapped it for the day, and like the two main actors went and played like shuffleboard, like like they were old, like they were legitimately like probably both had grandchildren old.
Yeah,
and I had heard at the time that the actress that played Moneypenny was down to play M in the next movie. But at the time, Broccoli didn't think that a woman could play M.
That's a damn shame, because that would have been awesome.
I think that would have been a really great transition.
Oh, I really remember this movie. I think it's Grace Jones. I think it's at the Eiffel Tower or whatever, where she like assassinates a dude with like a fishing rod and like a butterfly.
Yeah,
right.
Like, hooks him in the face
in the Eiffel Tower. Right.
Yeah. Crazy assassination.
Like. Yeah, it's weird.
And how awesome is it that there's a fight on the Eiffel Tower?
Yeah.
I mean, like. It wasn't, like, a fake... It was the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
Totally.
They filmed there. Like, we were talking during the marathon, like, how much would it cost to procure the Eiffel Tower for, like, a couple weeks of shooting? Like, that's pretty intense.
It's crazy. And then this has the Golden Gate Bridge, too, right? Like,
right.
Pre-X-Men 3 Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, speaking of warnings before or after a movie, I think this is the first or one of the first movies to say that any likenesses to Zorin... are unintentional.
Oh, right, it was on the DVD, right?
Yeah.
Like this is not Bill Gates or Steve Jobs.
Yeah,
it's like,
they don't want us to think that we're ripping on Apple.
That is kind of a cop out though, right? Because like clearly he's based on those guys. I mean, obviously they don't like shoot, you know, Apple workers, and they just send them to China and give them rage rooms and stuff.
Yeah.
But like,
I watched the Pirates of Silicon Valley movie.
It looked pretty similar. Now, the girl in this movie is pretty stupid, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's from, like, That 70s Show,
she's
right?
Kitty. Or, no, not Kitty, but...
Donna's mom.
Oh, really?
Is the Bond girl.
I didn't even recognize that.
It's totally that, like, world is not enough sort of Denise Richards thing, where she's a scientist, quote-unquote.
Yeah,
and it's, you don't buy it for a second. Like, she could barely work at, like, Burger King. She's clearly, like, an airhead. Like.
Yeah.
There was that cool scene at her house. These guys come in and, like, Moore grabs a shotgun and starts blasting people.
Oh,
oh, my God, Chuck, Roger Moore's just killing these people with a shotgun. But they all start getting up. And he looks at the gun and then looks at the girl and is like, what's in this gun? She goes, rock salt. And she goes, now you tell me.
Yeah,
like he's been like blowing these people away.
Yeah, he thought he just murdered six guys.
And he's like disappointed when he finds out it was rock salt.
This is the one where the elevator shaft is on fire, right?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh.
And this girl is so stupid that, this is the most ridiculous scene ever. This elevator catches fire, which I don't know if you guys listening at home are aware, this elevators are metal, so they don't catch fire. But this one did. And the whole shaft is on fire, and they're about exactly one floor down. So they could pry the doors open, or they could climb up one floor for no reason. But there's a ladder there, so Roger Moore opts to climb the ladder. She's just a scientist, so she doesn't know how ladders work. So she's just standing on the elevator, screaming for him to help her. He takes a fire hose off of the wall. And at this point, I'm thinking, okay, we got James Bond, we got a fire, and we got a fire hose. He's going to put out the fire. But probably the dumbest moment James Bond has had in the entire franchise, he begins lowering the fucking hose like it's a goddamn rope, a perfectly flammable rope, and he just lowers it down to this girl and starts lifting her up.
Who already had a ladder to get her out.
And for some reason,
anyway,
a rope makes way more sense to her. It's a climbing piece.
I mean, what else is close to an elevator shaft than a fucking fire hose? I mean, like, it's just... It's point A to point B, and you end up at point Z somehow, and you're like, what just happened here?
As ridiculous as that scene was, I have to give it to Donna's mom her screams
are
legit.
Very terrifying.
Like, they are legit. Like, it literally sounded like somebody was, like, shaving off her skin or something.
Like
horror movies. Yeah, she was like, holy shit.
But she was also one of the most annoying Bond girls in the sense that she would just say, James, help me, James. For, like, it was like a good, like, almost the whole movie.
She's an idiot. But she can scream, so.
I feel like at the end of the day, the Roger Moore Bond movies kind of ride this line between, like legit old-school Bond movies and, like, really silly, goofy kind of, like, almost comedies. And I feel like this movie, I think, has the best balance of, like, it's silly, it's kind of over the top, it has moments of levity, but, like, it's not disengaging or, like, distracting.
Yeah.
It's well, actually sort of, like, good.
Well, I think mostly because the moments of levity and humor are based on character choices. It wasn't, like, the characters have personalities that lend to that humor, whereas instead of it being just situationally, like, ridiculous or upsetting.
Yeah.
Like, they're like these characters, like, were at least of some interest and added character
to it. Right, like, Christopher Walken's, like, actually an interesting, weird character. They don't just, like, throw Bond in, like, a clown outfit.
Yeah.
There we go.
He's, speaking of Christopher Walken, another reason I think I give this movie a little bit of credit is because he's got a legit plan. It's not just, like, I'm going to be an asshole. Like, I know, like, we already, like, kind of went over, like, his whole plan, but, like, it's not like I'm just going to be an asshole supervillain and, like, destroy people because I feel like
just
it. It's
evil,
like,
for the sake of evil.
Yeah, it's like going back to, like, Goldfinger style. Like, he's got, like the plot of this, it balances out. Like, it's got a lot of ridiculousness, like, the Bond girl, but, like, the actual plot, like, what Bond is trying to prevent is also a legit thing that, like, theoretically could happen.
And I think it was this movie where Roger Moore at one point realized that he was older than the main Bond girl's mom. And that was when he decided he wasn't going to do any more movies after that point.
Rightfully so. Like, as much as we're singing the movie's praises and we like it, like, I think one of the detriments is Roger Moore definitely looks old.
And he doesn't act old, and it doesn't. I don't think it really affects his performance in any way. But I just didn't want to see him get hurt. You know.
You guys have anything else about A View to a Kill?
This had one of the better themes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course. It's probably one of the better songs. Like, it's certainly my top five songs.
It's my number two.
Or three. Like,
it's definitely up there. I wouldn't. I don't know if I put it in my top three, but it's definitely a really strong outing for Bond themes.
Yeah.
But I remember there was a. It was a big kerfuffle amongst the Broccolis about having a pop band do a theme song, because it hadn't really been done before. They'd been mostly, like, easy listening or, like, old school, like, classic.
Oh, come on.
And this
Lulu was a big pop singer. What are they talking about?
But but the song wasn't really.
Well, what about, like, Paul McCartney or something?
But that's definitely
pop
band. Pop song.
I mean, for sure.
Yeah, really. I would definitely count that as a pop song.
I wouldn't.
You're wrong.
So I'd like to add one last thing about A View to a Kill. When you're watching a marathon where the same character is prominent all throughout, us audience members really pay attention to the finer details and the things that make the character look human or not human. This was the first time in all the movies thus far where we saw James Bond sit down and eat a substantial meal.
Yeah.
Which
was quite interesting, because before when Sean Connery played him, he occasionally, I think really in one instance, he stopped to take a grape from a bowl of fruit and ate it. And he was on his way, so...
He just ate out of a bottle.
Exactly, yeah. That's
right. 17 movies before you see a main character put food in his mouth. I mean, because considering how many situations where he is around food, that's really kind of crazy.
Yeah.
That's an intense...
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it's like, movies don't have to stop it. Like,
they don't have to
show people eating.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal, though. How much of Honor, Majesty, Secret Service is Sir Hillary sitting at a table with, like, fucking turkeys?
Yeah, he doesn't eat with all those women.
He's just talking.
And he just talks about his bullshit job.
And all night, he has the tape recording in his room telling him to eat shit.
Yeah,
and then
talking
he gets
about chicken.
Up and he blathers on about genealogy for 45 minutes at the table. And then he just gets up and screws Meg Ryan at the end of it.
I wish he would have eaten just to, like, shut up for five minutes.
All right, that is the end of part three of the Cinemarathon James Bond discussion. Two more parts to go. There may be a bit of a gap between this one and the next as I'm going on vacation for a little while, but fear not, we will finish the Bond discussion. So tune in soon for part four. We'll see you then.